We're in a big gravel parking lot under a lush canopy of trees at the Boulevard Drive-In in Kansas City, Kansas. The screen is blank for now, while the sun is still out. People are setting up lawn chairs, dragging coolers of beer out of the car, or turning truck beds and blankets into comfortable seating areas. Kids squeal from the playground, and a concession stand is hopping. Some might say the drive-in movie theater is a dying trend, a leftover relic from another era. But the owner of this drive-in begs to differ. In fact, he'll tell you that himself. Our producer, Andrea Tudhope, met Wes Neal at his longtime stomping grounds down by Turkey Creek. It's in the city, but it feels like its own little world, tucked into a remote valley with trains going by.
Yeah, just keep getting better every year from Dorothy, the way I understand.
Wes Neal has worked at the Boulevard Drive-In for 65 years. And approaching 90 years old, you could say he's been around for a while. Yeah. But he wouldn't say it like that.
Thanks for taking some time. Appreciate it.
That's all I have is time.
Wes is the kind of guy who says he's never worked a day in his life. Of course, that's not the case. He grew up on a farm in the Missouri Boot Heel. That's the farthest, smallest segment of Missouri on the southeast corner of the state. He harvested crops and picked cotton every fall.
I'd follow a team of mules and a plow all day. You know, the plow would hit a stump underground, the plow handle hit me on the side and knocked me three rows over. We had to be tough back then.
And he had to walk uphill both ways to school. I'm kidding, but his parents' farm was 3 miles from the grocery store and the post office. Wes told me that when he'd come inside to rest around lunchtime, his dad would send him on an errand.
Hey boy, go pump the mules a trough of water while you're resting.
Some days, he'd walk 12 miles throughout the day. He left the farm when he was 25 and got a day job in Kansas City.
And I had all this energy. I couldn't go to sleep at night. I'd get up and run around the block 8 or 10 times just to get tired enough to go to sleep. So I come down here one night and ask them if they needed help, so they put me to work. And that took care of that.
That was back in 1953. He started working for the Boulevard Drive-In as a ramp boy, making $3 a night to direct cars with a flashlight and clean up after the movies. Back then, tickets were 50 cents a person. At the snack bar, you could snag a hamburger for 15 cents and a soda pop for a dime. Wes says he fell in love. At first, it was the escape from farm life.
Anything was exciting away from home back then because I never got away from home. We had to work all the time.
As far as I can tell, he's not kidding. He told me that when he first came to the city, he didn't know how to talk to people.
On the farm, I never had a conversation with any of my parents ever, any kind of conversation. They'd just tell me what to do, and if we had company, they'd tell me, go out and play, get away from here. So I didn't get to talk to anybody.
It sounds sad, but it didn't last for long. He liked working at the drive-in, not for the shows, but for the people. For over 30 years, he worked 2 jobs, ending his first job at 3 in the afternoon and starting his second at 6 p.m., When I asked him how he did that, his grandson, Brian, jumped in.
I was little, and Grandpa would come home. I was at Grandma's house, and he'd come home from Bayer around 3. Grandma would have this food ready. He'd eat. And then she's like, you boys, me and my cousin, you boys better not wake him up. He's going to be super mad.
Take a nap before.
Take a nap on the couch, and we had to be real quiet.
So he'd nap for an hour, then head straight to the drive-in. After his wife, Maisie, died, Wes moved onto the property. His house overlooks the lot. For 65 years, he's never been too far away. He says it doesn't look much different. There are upgrades here and there, but you can feel the old charm. They kept those old speakers that fit snugly on your car windows. There's a playground now where there used to be a small train for the kids and a zoo.
And then they had some sheep down there and had a couple of monkeys in the cage. They were a lot of trouble. The male didn't like me at all.
Not the drive-ins needed all of that. This is the 50s we're talking about.
Drive-ins was the only form of outside entertainment there was back then. There was no pro sports, nothing. So the drive-ins all just filled up and overflowed in the 50s and early 60s.
Wes says his drive-in never really experienced the drop in attendance that many other places did when television came along. He did what he had to do to keep it relevant. He's got plenty of stories about what happened after they started playing X-rated movies. More recently, they upgraded to digital projection for a sharper image, and Brian has helped him keep up with the changing times. Brian actually just bought a drone a few weeks ago.
And I'm a computer guy, and I said, well, what else can we do with this? I literally woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, sat straight up in bed, and said, we could do live video like the Kiss Cam.
But there's something else going on. I come back on a Sunday night before the show. Cars are filing in and kids are spilling out across the lot while their parents set up lawn chairs by the cars. And running the ticket booth tonight.
Hey, how are you?
How are you guys today? See, I had no idea I was actually going to pull up here and see the head man sitting right here.
Yeah, I work here on Sundays. We're slow.
Before I leave, Wes takes me around the 19-acre lot in his golf cart. He talks to people along the way. Everyone knows his name, and I don't think it's just because of that bejeweled belt buckle with his name on it. Wes tells me he's as retired as he'll ever be. As he pulls the golf cart off the gravel path and gets out to pick up trash, I start to believe him.
That was KCUR's Andrea Tudhope talking to Wes Neal at Boulevard Drive-In. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today on KCUR's Central Standard, we're talking about the past, present, and future of the drive-in movie theater. Where did this idea of watching movies from a car under the stars even come from? And why has Kansas City held on to the drive-in concept long after it's become fairly obsolete nationwide? Let's start by getting the lay of the land right now in Kansas City. Film critic Loey Lockerbie, good morning.
Good morning.
And longtime Kansas City film distributor John Shipp, now a consultant for Boulevard Drive-In. Hello, welcome to the show.
Greetings. Pleasure to be here.
So, you guys, we've heard a lot just now about Boulevard Drive-In and KCK. What are the main drive-ins in Kansas City right now?
The I-70, Twin, and Boulevard are the only three remaining drive-ins. The I-70 has four screens. The Twin has two. The Boulevard has one. A couple of years ago, B&B Theaters took over the operation of the I-70 and Twin, and they're doing a great job, of course. But the Boulevard, with the legendary Wes Neal and his grandson Brian and Clarissa, they capture that 1950s and 1960s spirit like probably no other drive-in in the country.
So capturing that spirit, do you think that's an important part of what a drive-in should be doing right now? We've just heard, you know, his grandson is doing all these things to keep it up to date, but it sounds like, from your perspective, capturing the 1950s is what the drive-in does.
We essentially go after the family audience, and most of the families that are attending the Boulevard Drive-In attend there because they went to the drive-ins with their parents. So, yes, even though it's got 4K digital projection there, which is the only drive-in in the metro area with 4K digital and digital sound, it's still up-to-date, but it's still retro. It's just a wonderful place to take the family.
And I agree.
Yeah, you're kind of a longtime KCK person. Talk about the significance of the Boulevard Drive-In to KCK.
Well, I mean, Wes Neal is a treasure, first of all. But it's been there forever. There used to be drive-ins all over KCK like there were everywhere else. But it's the one that's held on. And it's really, there's a very much a community feel when you go there. You know, everybody's parked. The line goes all the way back down to 635 as people are waiting to get in. And everybody's, you know, got their lawn chairs and got the trucks and the coolers, and Wes walks around saying hi to everybody. And it's just a very relaxed and, as John said, a very family atmosphere. And it's really expanded its reach beyond KCK. It's always been a KCK institution, but now everybody knows about it. It's got this kind of cachet locally because of its history and because of just the atmosphere they keep there.
It's kind of interesting how close it is to the city, but then, I mean, it's
right in the
middle
of the city. Yeah.
But when you're actually there, you feel like you're in the middle of nowhere because of the way those trees kind of swallow it up.
And the creeks nearby and mosquitoes everywhere.
Well, let's talk about the other drive-ins in Kansas City a little bit. I mean, what do you think is the sort of character of some of those other ones? Because they each have their own feel.
Well, the I-70 is big. You know, it's four screens. It's a little bit chaotic. It almost feels like a big outdoor multiplex in some ways. But B&B have really, you know, come in and kind of professionalized everything in a nice way. The Twin is kind of a throwback up in Independence. It actually was, I was talking to John about this earlier, it was designed by the same people who designed the State Drive-In in KCK, where I grew up going. And you go there and
which is no longer there.
No, huh? The marquee is exactly the same. The buildings look exactly the same.
Yeah, they do it's have kind of the, funny, yeah. It has the old-timey marquee, and it also has this very middle-of-nowhere kind of feeling.
Yeah.
Like you could just have entered another dimension.
We wondered if we were getting lost the one time I went there, because it's the I-70 is the easiest one to find, because it's like, you know, it's smack in the middle of the city, too. But, yeah, the Twin is way up there in the boonies.
You know what I love about the Twin is that you can, it's got two screens, that's why it's called the Twin, but you can always see the other movie in your rearview mirror.
Oh, yeah. When I was a kid going to the State, this was in the 70s, so, you know, there'd be like maybe a Disney film on one screen and then some exploitation movie on the other screen. So you'd be halfway, you know, 101 Dalmatians over here and Gas Pump Girls over on the other side, and you could just, you know, go back and forth.
But that gets at kind of the seediness of the drive-in's reputation, at least in a certain era.
Yeah, back in the 70s, the drive-ins really went through a pretty heavy exploitation stage when they were playing films like Big Bad Mama and Death Race 2000 and Candy Stripe Nurses, etc. These are R-rated films, but they're essentially going for the late teens and the kids in their 20s. And talking about drive-ins in Kansas City, you have to remember the fact that back in the 60s, a couple of guys by the name of Lou Vaughn and Martin Stone built the I-70 drive-in as a single-screen drive-in, and they were directly competitive to the Hart drive-in on one side, the 63rd Street drive-in down there, and the 40 drive-in further in Independence. But they ended up, after the I-70, they built the Twin drive-in, and they used that template to build the State drive-in. Twin, and then the South Twin Drive-In, and then the North Twin Drive-In. So before they started building their indoor theaters like the Blue Ridge and the Seville, the Red Bridge, et cetera, Truman Corners, they were heavily into the drive-in business.
Tell us a little bit more. I mean, you've given us some of the history, but you've been working in this industry since 1970. So take me back through some of the changes that you've witnessed here in town in the drive-in landscape.
Well, actually, I started in the business with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer in 1963, but I was transferred here in 69, so 70 is when I really started learning the territory. But when I was here in the 70s with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and then later as an independent distributor, there were drive-ins galore. You know, if you were breaking a film on the first break, there might be 10 or 15 drive-ins playing the film at the same time. And every one of those drive-ins had their own cadre of followers. If you're talking to anyone here, some of the old-timers who went to the drive-in back then, and you talk about the Fairyland and the Highway 40 and the Hart and the 63rd and the Clayco and the Lake Park Twin and the Riverside and the Shawnee and the Fox 50 and the Hillcrest, the
that
Kansas Drive-In.
Lot.
These were all drive-ins that were operating back then. So if I was breaking the student body on a particular week when I was distributing the films, we would have every one of those drive-ins represented.
So you would have one film that was playing in all of those theaters?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's like every neighborhood kind of had one almost?
Correct.
Tell me about sort of the locations of these theaters back in that time. Because right now, the ones that remain seem kind of like, other than the Boulevard, like they're kind of often somewhat like outside the heart
sure.
of the metro area.
Well, most of the drive-ins were originally built outside of the metro area because they could afford to get the real estate pretty cheaply. And then as the cities, the metropolitan areas expanded, that real estate, 10 or 20 acres, suddenly became very, very desirable for a much higher use. So, and of course, also, you must remember back when Stan Durwood and AMC built the Grand Theater in Dallas, Texas, and then continued to explode with the multiplex concepts, the drive-ins were just closing down right and left, mostly in the 80s and the 90s.
From your perspective, what do you think really accounts for that?
It's a combination of factors, but mostly it's purely dollars and cents. It's very difficult to make a living operating a drive-in. And if you've got only a single-screen drive-in and don't have the economy of scale like the I-70 and Twin do to a limited degree, it's extremely difficult to make it. And I don't know the count right now. The last count I saw, I think, was maybe around 325 physical drive-in locations in the country. But quite frankly, I'm not even sure there's that many. But very, very few of those are single screen. Very, very few.
When you were witnessing this transformation, what were some of the first signs you saw? And do you remember having moments that kind of tugged at your heartstrings?
Not a specific moment, because it's always been a gradual process. But you definitely started in the 90s seeing the demise of the drive-ins. A lot of people think that one of the contributing factors was daylight savings time, of course, because like here in Kansas City, the first feature in the middle of June is only going to get on the screen maybe 9:15 or 9:30. So if you got a double feature or even a triple feature, you might be there until 3 o'clock in the morning.
So you think daylight savings did have a little to do with it?
It was one contributing factor, but it's always a matter of economics. You have to follow those dollars, and that real estate was just too valuable for a drive-in.
Did you go to the drive-in as a kid?
Not really. I didn't start until I got into business. I might have gone a couple of times as a kid, but it's not a strong memory like it is for so many people.
What about you, Loewy?
Yeah. I mean, it was a good, cheap way to spend a weekend, and the state drive-in was fairly close by, and it stayed open for a while. I think it was open until, like, the late 80s. We would go periodically during the summer, and, it was fun, and it was, you know, the era when they were getting a little bit seedy, but there was usually at least one screen showing something you could take the kids to.
The 101 Dalmatians.
Yeah, you know, Rescuers or something like that, yeah.
What?
Some of those old-time drive-in managers like Daryl Smith and Leroy and Mary Shaver are still around. And Leroy and Mary Shaver were at the Twin when Loewy was going there, as a matter of fact, and running it. Now they're at the they were at the state then. They're right at the Twin Drive-In now. So they're around.
For people who go to the drive-in now, I'm one of those people, and I didn't go as a kid. I mean, I think that the 80s when I grew up were maybe kind of a quiet time for that, but I enjoy it now, and I wonder what you guys think is the appeal for people who are going to the drive-in in 2017 when there are so many other options for how to consume media.
Well, I think nostalgia is probably the biggest factor. I mean, I like to go because I went as a kid, and it's a very unique experience. I mean, you know, you're out there under the stars. It's cheap compared to going to the multiplex. And, you know, there's just that kind of communal feeling to it because everybody's up walking around, running around, talking. You don't go for the movie. I don't think anybody's ever really gone to the drive-in for the movie because there's so many distractions and so much else going on that you're going to miss stuff.
Yeah, you see groups of people doing their own thing. Like there'll be this one group over here that's
playing,
you know,
Frisbee or something.
Yeah. These other ones have a deck of cards or...
Yeah, I mean, it's a social activity and a community activity that just happens to have a movie playing in the background, generally.
Does the drive-in mean something to you? I mean, what would we lose, in your mind, if the last remaining drive-in movie theaters were to close up and shut down?
Well, I think it does have a community feel to it, and it does have a sense of everybody just kind of coming together to have a nice time with the family and that kind of thing. And there aren't a lot of situations where you can do that that doesn't cost a fortune or where there aren't a lot of restrictions. So I think we'd lose something there. And it's just part of our history, and it's an important part of our history.
What do you think, John?
Oh, I totally concur. Totally agree. It's kind of interesting right now because on a national basis, there are people in a lot of states who are building new drive-ins. And some of them are going specifically for more of a millennial, even a hipster-type vibe, and with craft beer and, a lot of bells and whistles that do appeal to a particular demo. The Boulevard Drive-In, however, we're sticking with the family crowd. We want those kids running around. We want them to have fun, and we want to play the latest Disney movie.
Call 816-235-2888 to tell us what the drive-in means to you. Share your best drive-in stories and memories to help us understand it better. We'll hear listener stories and add some national context to this conversation after the break. I'm Gina Kaufman, Central Standard. We'll be right back. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR Central Standard. And did you go to the drive-in movies in the 50s, 60s, or 70s? What was it like? What's your best story? And if you go to the drive-in now in 2017, what's the appeal? 816-235-2888 is the number to call. We've been talking to Loewy Lockerbie and John Shipp. Let's hear now from Mary Morley Cohen. She's a drive-in movie scholar with us from the University of Chicago. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Happy to be here.
So do you get to hang out at drive-in movie theaters for your research? Because if you do, I'm jealous and rethinking a lot of life choices.
I do. There are actually two drive-ins still in operation in the Chicago area, but actually I focus more on the history of drive-ins. So I'm most interested in the drive-in theaters that existed in the late 40s and during the 1950s.
Tell me about the 40s and 50s in particular.
Mm-hmm. So that was when the drive-in was really booming. We had, in this country, close to 5,000 drive-in theaters around the country. And I think it really represented a unique moment in the history of film exhibition, sort of a transition from the old picture palaces and traditional forms of mass entertainment to the more privatized forms of entertainment like television and now watching Netflix at home. So it was sort of a unique transitional moment.
Stick with that for a moment?
Because, sure.
You know, I guess I hear you talking about this idea of this shared form of public entertainment that movies used to be, where you would go to a special place where the movies would show and everyone would be in their seats and you're all kind of a generalized crowd. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
The crowd enjoys the movie in public. And then now there's, you know, a lot of people would watch a movie on their own screen from a couch very, very privately in their own little bubbles. Are you saying that the drive-in is kind of a weird combination of those two? Because I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And even though there are public spaces within the drive-in, part of what makes them really fun is you can sit in your car and be relaxed in a way you could at home. So I went to drive-ins growing up, and I loved going in my pajamas. That was not something you could do in an ordinary public space or an ordinary movie theater. So there's something really unique about that moment in film history.
And your parents were probably like, we can still go to a movie, kids in her pajamas, and she'll fall asleep eventually.
Exactly. As John said, it's sort of the perfect family entertainment where there's something for everyone in the family, which makes it really fun. But it also means that there are some strange and interesting things that can happen when you have sort of your private home away from home in the middle of a public space.
Can you give an example of one of those things that can happen?
Sure. Well, in fact, one of my strongest memories of going to a drive-in happened when I was about 8 or 9. And we, as always, watched the family feature together as a family. And then right before my brother and I were supposed to go to the back of the station wagon to go to sleep during the adult feature, there was a cartoon with Bambi. And that was, at the time, a favorite Disney character. And it turned out that it was, in fact, Bambi versus Godzilla, which is this sort of famous cult short where Bambi gets squashed by Godzilla. And I was, of course, traumatized at the time. But it's sort of one of the perverse pleasures of drive-ins that it tries to do or entertain everybody, and there are some interesting things that can happen when you do that.
Yeah, I mean, the two ends of the drive-in audience spectrum sharing that space is, it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so what do you know about where this kind of bizarre idea came from to put people outdoors in cars at night watching movies in a big parking lot?
So it originated in 1933 in Camden, New Jersey. A man by the name of Richard Hollingshead had a drive-in store and had this idea of other forms of entertainment, other things you could do with cars, which were becoming more and more popular at the time. They really didn't take off until after World War II, when more people were moving out to the suburbs and more people had cars. And I think the height of drive-ins really revolve around this fascination with car culture and with the distribution of people from city centers into suburbs. So the drive-in was sort of the perfect entertainment for that moment.
Nationally, what's happened to drive-ins over the years?
interesting. You know, as I think John mentioned, there are only about 300, a little over 300 drive-ins in operation today. But there are still sort of interesting vestiges of drive-ins, especially in California. There's been this guerrilla drive-in movement where people take portable projectors and just have meetups with friends and project films on the side of abandoned buildings and sort of relive the nostalgia of the drive-in on their own.
Why? I mean, has the story played out differently in different regions of the country?
Absolutely. As I think John mentioned, it's a lot about the economics. So if you live in an area where real estate prices are affordable, you can afford to operate a drive-in. You have the most drive-ins remaining in California, where the season is much longer. You can have more of a year-round season. In places like Chicago, it's tough. It's really in very outlying areas where you can still find a drive-in.
I've wondered if Kansas City is an anomaly in clinging so passionately to the handful of drive-ins that are still around, and with like kind of a niche crowd that is almost religious about the drive-in.
It could be. I mean, what's interesting to me about Kansas City is it had the very first shopping mall that accommodated cars. I can't remember the name of the shopping mall.
The Plaza.
Yeah, the Plaza, exactly. And a lot of film scholars say that it was shopping centers like that that displaced a lot of the drive-ins. But in Kansas City, you have both a thriving shopping center like the Plaza, as well as two really popular drive-ins. So there is something unique going on there.
On a per capita basis, Kansas City does have more drive-in screens than any other metro area in the country, as far as we know, with 7 drive-in screens. It's pretty good representation. And as far as drive-ins go, man, the history of them, and it's great that you're spending this time in this small niche. But, you know, down in Florida, they had fly-in drive-ins. They had drive-ins mm-hmm. there on the water
what?
Where you could fly your plane and land there, you know,
wait,
on the
so,
water.
Like
and,
enough people have planes for that to
well,
work?
Well, it
like
didn't last that long, so not
like
necessarily
that.
A lot of people had that, as a matter of fact. But actually, when I started in the business, I was selling film for Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer down in southern Missouri, and I remember seeing a drive-in that projected the image on the side of a barn, and they had one big blast speaker on top of the barn. Everybody just parked on the grass around there because they didn't have ramps. I think it was near Seymour, Missouri. So the drive-in today has gone a long way, but there have been so many variations of that theme.
Yeah, I mean, outdoor movies, it seems like part of the thing is it's just tragic on a beautiful night to sit inside watching a movie.
Yep.
That's simple.
I might also mention down in Sarasota, Florida, I remember selling film to a drive-in called the Bee Ridge Drive-In that had air conditioning vents next to every speaker. So you could actually, you know, open your window, put that thing in there, and turn on the air conditioning. It was so hot. So, I mean, you know, they've tried everything.
God, we just used the little portable fans.
Environmental disaster, but sounds very comfortable.
The ozone layer went missing right above that drive.
Let's talk to Greg in North Kansas City. Hi, Greg.
Hey, I've moved out of Midtown. Hi, John.
Hey. A
couple of stories. I'm going to start current and go backward. There's a restored single-screen, beautiful drive-in called the Route 66 Drive-In, just
Carthage.
Carthage, Missouri, formerly owned by Wes Allenbaugh and his family. They restored it, and then they sold it to another guy. It's open on weekends. They do PG&G movies only.
How long is that drive from Kansas City?
It's 2 hours. Depending
hours.
On how you drive, mm-hmm. I don't drive the speed limit. But it's 150 miles. So then when I was in high school, it wasn't a family scene for me, excuse me, guys, at the drive-in. We lived close to the Kansas line where you could go get 3-2 beer, and we knew how to get fake IDs.
3-2 beer. Can you explain that concept?
Drive-up liquor stores where you could get 3-2.
3.2%. You could buy beer at the age of 18 in Kansas, and it was 3.2% alcohol content. We lived in Missouri, but we got fake IDs. And we went to Kansas, and we knew the places to go to buy the 3-2 beer. We would then bring the cold 3-2 beer back from Galena or Pittsburgh or wherever to the drive-in, and we would, if it was the guys, this is the guy story, we would watch the movies like Wild Angels and the sort of, I would call, almost like soft porn movies. You know, guys going out and getting in trouble and chasing girls, whatever. But then the other scene was you would get your date, either double date or single date, depending on how far you wanted to go, and you'd go to the 66 drive-in, and you would go watch a movie with your date. And so it was a date thing. It was a teenage scene.
I appreciate your honesty, Greg. Can I just say that? You're a very honest caller. Well, so this sounds like a pretty wild time, and I feel like part of what we're hearing is that the drive-in is a place where people can kind of, I don't know, get away with, and not just enjoy the public life privately or private life publicly, but also get away with a lot of things that in other settings that are not sort of your own little enclosed world out there in public, you might not get away with.
Freedom.
Well, yeah, it was teenagers primarily that drove the success of it in the 50s and 60s, and part of that was, you know, there was a teenage pop culture. They had more disposable income and cars. So, yeah, it's where you went to make out with your date or where you went to just hang out with your friends and be seen and show off the car and that kind of stuff.
In movies that have scenes from the 1950s or 60s there's always, like, couples in the backseat of every car. But then also someone policing with a flashlight what is going on in those cars. Was that a real thing?
It was.
Tell me about
certain
it.
Places. Well, you just explained it pretty darn well. You know, a lot of the kids would go to the back rows
job?
To make out, of course. Huh?
Was that an actual job to go around with a flashlight? And
security or the owner or somebody?
Actually, West was doing that back in the 50s. He just didn't want to admit it.
Okay.
And incidentally,
was he doing?
you talk about the 66 drive-in in Carthage. Back in the 60s, there was that drive-in. There was the Crest drive-in in Joplin. There was the Tri-States drive-in in Joplin. There was the Twilight drive-in Baxter Springs. There was another one or two. And the 66 is the only survivor, and they do huge business. I monitor grosses around the country. And this past weekend, the 66 was playing Jaws, the original Jaws, in Sandlot. And, man, they were selling out. They were doing huge business. So it's wow. Wonderful that some are still surviving down there.
We have an email from a listener who says that in St. Louis for Memorial and Labor Day weekends, they would spend an entire night showing either action movies or horror movies through the night, mm-hmm. and the place would always be packed. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of a tradition? Like marathons, all-night marathons?
Dusk to Dawn is what they call that kind of shows. And as a matter of fact, a local guy named Jack Posinger, Jack goes to the movies, if any of you guys have listened to radio for the last 40 years. But Jack used to promote things called the blowouts when he was with KY 102 Radio. And they would have, he'd have three or four or five features, and it would start at dusk and it would end at dawn. Or the other way around. No, Dusk to Dawn. And he would fill up every drive-in. In fact, they became so successful that they had such big traffic jams, the police were called out, and Jack had to stop doing it because they sold so many tickets. But that became a tradition, man. That was right here in Kansas City.
Let's talk to Brian in Shawnee. Hi, Brian.
Hi, I'm so glad you guys are talking about drive-ins. I've been a big fan my entire life. I grew up within a few blocks of the Fox Theater, 87th and I-35, which turned into a grocery store, which I worked into later. And then we used to go to the one at 119th and I-35. There was, I think, a twin theater there.
South Twin.
It was a truck stop on a gravel road back then, and now it's, 119th. But anyway,
Studio.
It was a truck stop at the same time, or that's a separate era?
It was around that area. There was nothing there at I-35 and 119th except for a truck stop and that drive-in and gravel roads. But I've been going to the Boulevard forever, even since high school days in 1987. I would organize our marching band to try to get 30, 40, 50 kids out there as a group activity because I know a lot of them hadn't experienced it. So I'm kind of an apostle of drive-ins, love them. And I've been to your drive-in already once this year, had a great night, got to see a first run of a great, cool movie. And anyway, I just wanted to share one story. You ask about stories, and one of my favorite drive-in stories is at your Boulevard Theater when the movie Twister came out. Big blockbuster tornado movie, and we were there, and in that movie there's a scene when a drive-in movie theater is getting destroyed by a tornado, and as we were there, we were listening also to the Royals on radio in background, and listening to the weather reports as Kansas City was getting, you know, ambushed by a giant, humongous thunderstorm. It didn't turn out to be anything devastating, but as you're watching the drive-in theater and I'm watching the lightning and the clouds roll in from the west, I was like, this could be really interesting, watching a movie about our future experience, perhaps. Anyway,
yeah, life imitates art.
Yeah. Exactly, and it would not have been the same if I was indoors. Not
Thank
at
you,
all.
Brian. That's true. You know, I do love the weather factor at the drive-in. I mean, if you've been to the drive-in in a big storm, it's its own experience with the windshield wipers. Be careful that you don't kill your battery doing that, by the way.
Usually just end up leaving.
Wes has boosters, so you don't have to worry.
You just end up leaving? I think it's depending
That's
on the movie.
That's what we always did. Well, you know, it depends on what you're there for. If you do actually want to see the movie, you're probably not going to stick around if you know, can't see it through the windshield wipers. Or
I saw the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man really? During a storm at the Twin Drive-In, and it was so cool because he's like scaling buildings and there's like dramatic thunder and lightning.
Yeah, if it's just thunder and lightning but it's not pouring down rain, it is very dramatic. But when it starts raining, it kind of loses a little bit of its luster.
And Brian should get a free carload pass for that great story.
Yes. Let's talk to Chelsea in Liberty. Hi, Chelsea.
Hi, how are you guys today?
Good. How about you? What's your story?
So we didn't actually go to the drive-in much as kids, which kind of puzzles me because I'm the oldest of five, and it is much cheaper than multiplexes even back then. I'm 29 now, so like, you know, 15 years to 20 years ago. But for me, the drive-in really kind of became a novelty when I was like an older teenager in my young 20s. My dad owns his own business, and he would let us borrow some of his pickup trucks. He has these big Super Duty pickup trucks, and we would blow up air mattresses and throw them in the bed of the trucks with pillows and blankets. We'd take like two or three of them, fill up coolers full of snacks and food. We weren't going to pay money for concessions, and you know, we'd spend our Fridays and Saturday nights out at the drive-in and, you know, have popcorn fights across the bed of the trucks, and just, you know, it was always just a lot of fun, a good time for all of us friends to get together.
Well, thanks, Chelsea, for that memory. I think it's interesting the difference between, do some drive-ins and over different periods of time count heads per person and some car fulls of people, or is it always, you know, admission based on the individual? Because I can imagine a carload of people being sort of a nice choice for a family that has a lot of kids to buy tickets for.
Here in Kansas City, the three drive-ins do not have carload passes, but around the country they do. Like the drive-in mentioned, the 66, as I recall, that is X number of dollars per car as opposed to per individuals. It averages two people per car.
Well, we've got to take one more break. There's still a little time left for your stories from the drive-in movies at 816-235-2888. And if you went as a teenager and your story takes place in the backseat of a car, let's keep the retelling PG. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman, back in a minute. We are back. I'm Gina Kaufman here with film critic Loey Lockerbie, John Shipp, a longtime local industry guy and unofficial Kansas City drive-in historian. We've also got Mary Morley Cohen with us. She's the assistant dean of the Graham School at the University of Chicago, and she studies drive-ins, their history, and their significance. We're talking with you and hearing your stories, but Loey, I wanted to give you a chance to chime in with yours because it seems like your parents had quite a time at the drive-in.
Yeah, well, in the late 60s and early 70s, most of my dad's family worked at the Kansas Drive-In, which is at I-70 and 78th Street in KCK. And so, you know, they got in for free. And that's where my parents would go on dates when they were going out. And, you know, they'd watch cheesy old horror films, you know, Vincent Price movies and stuff like that, which, you know, definitely was passed along to me as far as tastes in movies go. And my dad always tells his Wake Up Little Susie story when, before he met my mom, he was dating this girl and they were there lying on the hood of the car watching the movie and they fell asleep. And he's, next thing they know, it's like middle of the night and people are honking their horns going, hey, the movie's over.
Let's talk with Jan. Jan has a question for us from Shawnee, Kansas. Hi, Jan. Jan, are you there? Okay, well, let's turn instead to Marty. Marty joins us from Lee's Summit.
Hi.
Hi.
When I was a kid back in the 60s and 70s, we lived right across the street from the people that owned the 40 Highway Drive-In. And when I was a kid, that was great because we would get there and we'd get, you know, get in free and get free food and all that like that. But when I became a teenager and they started showing, like, more R-rated movies and, with nude scenes and stuff like that, and then I couldn't go with my friends to the 40 because my mom was good friends with the lady that took the tickets and ran the theater or ran the drive-in, so I was kind of
you were going to get busted. Banned.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't go with the rest of the guys to see these because my mom would always find out, so I, you know,
yeah,
and
that,
I couldn't even.
That change in that change in content hit really close to home for you.
No hiding in the trunk. That was always like a time-honored tradition.
Yeah, and she wouldn't even. She would always know, you know, which girls I dated or whatever.
Oh,
and,
no. You can't run, you can't hide. Let's talk now with Bart. Bart is with us from Edgerton, Missouri. Hi, Bart.
Hey, it's Mark, M-A-R-K, but can you hear me?
Yeah. Hi, Mark. Yeah. Sorry about that.
That's all right. I started dating. My first date with my wife was at a drive-in, and we joke about it because I took her to see these car movies. And I didn't really think that much about it. We were 17, 18 years old, and we've been married for 35 years. And we went to a lot of drive-ins. Loved going to them.
Are there any that we haven't mentioned on this show, a forgotten drive-in from the Kansas City Metro?
Well, the drive-in I took on that first date, I think, was at Shawnee Mission Parkway in Long.
John Shipp is nodding.
Yeah, it was probably the Shawnee Drive-In owned by Dickinson Theaters at the time.
Yeah, it was a great. We went there several times. And that first date, we ran into these guys. I was really a novice at dating. We ran into these guys that my wife knew from our high school, older guys. And when we looked back, they were making fun of me and making fun of us because we went to a drive-in on this first date, and it was as innocent as can be. But and all these car racing movies, and it was funny. In hindsight, I didn't catch on at the time, but in hindsight, it was pretty funny.
Well, you know, Mark, I don't know why. I'm going to call him every name imaginable by the end of the show. He is among many callers who have been bringing up drive-ins that we hadn't heard about even in getting ready for this show. And I'm wondering, and, you know, John, you're always recognizing them, but what kind of record exists of these places? Is it all just in the memories of Midwesterners who happen to go there?
Oh, no. There are several websites out there, Cinema Treasures, any number of drive-in-oriented websites, too, that essentially have built databases of all of the different drive-ins, open and closed on a state-by-state basis. So you can Google it, and you can go to different websites and just click on the state. And it will list every drive-in that they've ever been able to identify that was and approximately when it's closed. So there's a lot of historians out there, or there's several out there, that are doing a great job of keeping track of these old relics and the new ones.
And you can also get some great stories from historical newspapers in various cities.
Is there an example of a story you've gotten that way that you think we should be hearing right now?
You know, it's sort of interesting. We talked at various times about drive-ins being kind of entertainment complexes. So there was a movie theater in Georgia that actually had drive-in church on Sundays. So it was sort of kind of a strange experience for teenagers who would go on Saturday night with their dates and then go to the same place the next morning for church.
That is funny.
Absolution.
And that was true all over the country as far as that goes. It wasn't just in Georgia, because Jack Posiger tells great stories about when he was operating the Commonwealth Drive-In in Junction City, and they had a Sunday church.
Junction City, Kansas.
Yeah, crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Okay, let's talk to Megan in Lenexa. Hi, Megan.
Hi there. Yes. Earlier, I think you mentioned about not letting your car battery die.
Oh, yes.
While out there.
That's from experience.
And that sparked a memory. I had completely forgotten about it from my childhood. I'm 27 now, so this was probably late 90s, early 2000s. It was a family. We went as a family. There were four kids and our parents, and we were in the family Suburban that fit us all. And I think it was a back-to-back movie night, one of those doubleheaders. So it was a really late night. And I can't remember exactly what drive-in. It was either the I-70 or the Boulevard. And whichever one, I'm not, of course, I live on the Kansas side, so I'm not too familiar with those areas, but it wasn't the safest area, and maybe it's still not.
Feel that way to you. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and just my dad, just the way he was acting at the time was like, okay, this isn't good, because by the time the second movie ended, it was probably well past midnight. All the cars have left the parking lot, and our car is the only one out there. And I just remember my dad being concerned for our safety and calling the police department and just saying, we at least need someone out here to help. We need someone to help jump our car, and we just want someone here for our safety. My family is out here.
Yeah.
We're, you know, if anyone wanted to come jump us or rob us or whatever, they could. And
where were the employees?
yeah, you know, it's interesting because when that happened to me, the employees were definitely ready to help out. Thank you for that call, Megan. I want to get one last caller in here before our time is up. We're going to talk to Ed in Raytown. Hi, Ed.
Hi.
Tell us your story.
I have two quick stories. One, in the 50s, I used to go visit my grandparents who owned a corner grocery store in a tiny town that no longer exists in South Missouri called Virgil, Missouri. And every Saturday night, they would project black and white movies onto the side of the two-story clapboard side of the grocery store. And I remember families would come even in horse-drawn equipment and sit out and watch a movie. And between the reels, of course, sometimes there was a five-minute delay while they were setting it up.
Yeah.
And so that's really the first memory. The second one was the drive-in that was at the Nolan Road and 40 Highway. Used to go to that as a teenager. And during the changes between shows, they had a guy that would come in on a flatbed truck, and they had a big sign on the side called Organ Bug Harry. And he had this big Hammond organ, and he would sit up on this flatbed truck and play.
The lengths people will go to turn the outdoors into a movie theater in whatever era. You know, Mary, could you talk to us about what Ed's story and the story of this whole show tells us about our changing relationship to cars, to technology, to each other?
Mm-hmm. The drive-in it represents this unique moment where we have this love relationship with cars. But I think right now, drive-ins represent a kind of communal, fun, wholesome entertainment that is really hard to come by as we spend so much time on our phones and in our homes. The drive-in is something that represents a kind of fun form of entertainment that isn't so easy to come by anymore.
What's your sense of the future of the drive-in?
I hope that we will always have a few drive-ins to go to, and if not, hopefully we can project our own films to our friends and family wherever we can find a space to project them.
Well, our time is up, but keep sharing your drive-in stories and memories on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. Loewy Lockerbie and John Shipp have been our knowledgeable Kansas City film people with us in the studio this morning. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our pleasure. It was fun. Thanks.
Yeah, Mary Morley Cohen, I want to thank you for putting Kansas City's drive-in story in a national context. Thanks.
Thank you.
You can listen back to this conversation at kcur.org/centralstandard. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. You'll find all of our archived shows there. Tomorrow, we're going to step back from the big airport debate here in Kansas City and ask what a city's airport represents. Does KCI say something about us, our priorities, maybe even our values, whether you love it or don't? That's tomorrow at 10. We hope you'll join us. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan. Danielle Hogarty is our intern. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Up to Date is next. Don't miss it.